Yo, yo, yo. What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your Cape Crusader Cody, and we're keeping it geekly with our new guest, Nick Patera. We're here to break down Axe Wielder John. And, dude, complete bloodbath. I loved every bit of this. But that's not all you've worked on. I mean, Red Wing, Manhattan Projects, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles issue 6, Doom Patrol, S.H.I.E.L.D., everything. But your first creator-owned IP, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I own all my stuff with Imager co-own it, but this is the first thing that's all me. Thing that I'm writing and drawing. I contribute to story pretty much on everything I've done because I usually work Marvel style. On the TMT thing, I got a co-credit. IDW gave me that, but this was the first thing that was really whole cloth me that I was going to write and draw and make no matter what. It's been a heck of a journey. The book's finished, which I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. It's been finished for a minute. We're waiting on the printer now, and yeah, man, I'm super excited. This was like my passion project, and I'm a new father, and you know, the temptation to work freelance again for the easier, quicker paycheck, or to bet on myself. It was always easy to bet on myself before, because I, you know, my overhead was like $400 living on a buddy's couch, but now I got a house and kids and a wife, and I'm a provider essentially. Dude. Now. Now I'm gambling with them. So when I decided on to venture out with Axe Wielder, I just took it very seriously. I was going to draw the best I could draw. I knew if I was going to write for myself, I could write bad, but draw really, really detailed. So mm-hmm. I drew all the pages like three feet high, really oversized. pretty much every panel in the book is on its own 11 by 17 board. I was just going to make it as drawn the best I'd ever drawn, because I wasn't, you know, I knew I could write decently, but I didn't know, like I was saying before we got on, whenever I'm writing, it's me putting the thoughts down on the page. I don't know exactly how those thoughts come back up into the reader's head, and are they getting what I want out of the moments? And so far, man, the reaction, because we've been sending the PDF out, has been really good, you know? So I'm super excited about it. You know, for me, as writing wise, it was, I know what I want out of a scene, and I can trust that I'm putting it down into the scene, but how does it read out of the scene and into the reader's head? And right now the reactions have been really good. You know, like we sent the PDF out, it's finished, and you got to read it. And I've done a couple other interviews. All the hardcover backers and the PDF backers should have gotten the PDF by now. So I'm getting some good reactions so far. So right now it's going really good, and I'm super excited about it. And it seems like the emotional beats that I want it to be juxtaposed with the blood and guts, if they seem to be hitting, and that makes me really happy, you know, more so than, I know I draw decently already, but writing wise, you know, I've got a little trepidation there, and just to hear that people are getting some of the emotional moments, some of the gentler moments with the detailed art, makes me really happy, man.
I don't even know where to begin. First and foremost, the statement where you're like, you know, you could take the easy money, but doing what you love, even, you know, it's that fear of sink or swim. I literally just had a tweet where I'm like, this is what I'm going to be doing with what I'm doing now. You know, I'm tired of my job. I love doing this, and it's time to take that plunge. And it's the scariest thing, because before, you know, when you don't have a family to worry about, it's a whole different ballpark. But now you got, you know, people to provide for, a mouse to feed, it becomes so much more scary and intricate. I mean, but you are absolutely slaughtering it with this campaign. And I mean, for all the right reasons. I had, like you said, the opportunity to read this, and it was just so brutal. I love the combination of just how brutal and graphic the art is. John is just horrific to look at. I mean, he was handsome before he lost his face, but now he's just horrific, covered with scars. And it's like the humor, the balance of that with the humor is just like chef kiss. I mean, I'm curious, do you have a kill count? It looks like there was just hundreds of people dying throughout this.
Man, I don't have a kill count. I know there's some pages with like 100 figures on them getting slaughtered. It just a single double page spread. But I did love the fact that when I was drawing it, and I was like, this is taking forever. But like, there's an end sequence where they focus on John, and like, basically the last line is saying something like, you ain't seen nothing yet, because now he's going on a rampage, you know, mm-hmm. the last page, one of the last pages. And I'm like, what if I just draw the bloodiest comic ever and then tell you at the end, you ain't seen nothing yet, you know, like I love that idea as an ending, you know. I mean, that's not too much of a spoiler. I'm not killing the main character in book mm-hmm. one, you know, but you know, he's on a rampage, and he's on a rampage for a reason. And Yeah, I'm super excited about it, man. I'm so excited for people to read it and to hear your reaction. And that makes me so happy, man.
So let's talk a little bit about John, though. I mean, he is huge. He's buff. I mean, missing half his face and just is like insane. He's like a berserker. Like, what was some of the influences for this character design?
I mean, for the character design itself, I really love masculine like dudes, you know, like watching MMA. There's a couple guys, like I'm into arm wrestling. There's a guy named Travis Bajant who's got like this big personality that I like. Don Fry, the MMA fighter, and he's got this big mustache. And I always associated mustaches with like machismo. And with John as a sight gag, there's something that happens to John that takes him down a peg, right? Where he's not quite the machismo man that he used to be. And I like the idea just of breaking a mustache in half to reflect like a visual sight gag of him losing that machismo and his ego getting taken down a peg. So like take his face. And I just thought, you know, it would be really bold character design wise to just gash the dude's face off.
Yeah.
And I just,
yeah.
You know, how far I could go with that sight gag and how hideous. And then like, could I show you something that was hideous, like almost like repellent, but could I write him in a way where you're rooting for him? And that was a challenge for me. And I was like, well, I'm going to give myself that challenge. And there's like other characters that see John from a different light. And I don't think those characters are judgmental as much. And there's something about that, that I wanted to show too. Like, you know, if I like for innocent, for example, my daughter's 3 and 4, I go in there, they don't call me fat dad. They just think I'm the strongest daddy in the world. Right. And I love that. And the way like innocent people can view you versus judgmental people and saying something with his design that way was cool too. And then with his bulk and like his little pea head and he's like a big concrete block of a man, right? I wanted to do like the most machismo, unapologetic. I wanted someone that could be put up next to Lobo as far as body hair. Yeah. You know, I wanted something that was really, I was making my vehicle what I want from John. And I think it's important, like you said earlier, like you tweeted out what you want. You got to say what you want because it's an extension of your mind and that starts lining out what you're going to do. And for me, I was like, I'm going to make John my avatar in comics. I'm going to make him, when you look at the Goon, when you look at Mad Men, when you look at Hellboy, when you look at Shaolin Cowboy, you know that that is Eric Powell, that's Mike Allred, that's, you know, that's all the good, Jeff Darrow. They have avatars that are floating around that represent them. Steve Ditko has that with Spider-Man, you know, like, but instead of working being the 5,000th person to take on a Spider-Man fill-in gig, why not just make my thing, you know? And like, it's also stacking skill sets in a sense. And maybe I'm not the best artist, maybe I'm not the best writer, but if I mix the two, maybe I'm a little better. And also, I love to talk and I love to like talk about myself is fun. And I'm not a bashful artist. And I think a lot of artists are. So then I'm getting to stack with crowdfunding, I'm able to stack me running my mouth and thinking about promotion and doing things and stacking some skills that aren't necessarily just me drawing or limiting me to the detail guy. Or I got Eisner nominated for the Manhattan Project. So I was getting like,
let's go.
I was getting alternate universe gigs all the time. Like they were just, people try to, you got to show people what you are, not tell them what you are. And because once they see it, they think, oh, you're that guy. And I never really did my big character. And I was like, no, I'm going to show them that I'm a guy that's got a big heart, loves the gut and blutz that you think about me, but there's another side to me too. Just like there's another side to John. And so I'm just trying to do everything I can to win and really just be a good provider for my family, you know, as a new dad and a homeowner now and a wife, you know, on my back telling me money. I'm just doing everything I can. And thankfully, you know, shows like yours, Cody, and just the communities coming, like, but they're really like, you guys are the voice to the fans. No one buys this if they don't know about it, especially crowdfunding. So like for you to have me on, to read the book is amazing. To have a good reaction is amazing, but also like, to let me basically pitch this to your fans means the world, because without that, there is no lifeline, at least with crowdfunding. Like you really got to get it out there. So,
man, I'm wondering if somehow like Like, because, like, I say that all the time. People are always like, thank you. And I'm like, no, thank you, because without you, there is no show. Like, you, like, creators are my show's lifeblood. Like, I have no show if there's not creators wanting to come on. So, like, dude, it's just like, this is like hitting beat for beat. Can we, let's dive back a little bit into the story. The characters, Frank Horace and the blind Oracle, or a Celibant Oracle. I love that so much. Dude, those characters are wild. I mean, that, let's talk about that Oracle. She's just out of this world, man.
Oh yeah, senile Oracle.
Senile, yep, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but is she senile? I don't know. I don't know if she's senile. There's something about old people. Like, I've watched my grandmother, you know, they passed now, but they become out of time, you know, like their words that they use that they cannot use anymore, but they used them, you know, they weren't with the times anymore. They didn't have a filter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea that, man, if my grandmother stayed around another 200 years, she'd be really out of time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And if Oracle can live forever, she's just going to be half senile and cursing and Tourette's, mm-hmm. you know, just out of it. And I was like, man, what if I had a crazy Oracle? And really every character that I introduced that I essentially gave a name to in book one, they're main characters throughout. So they'll all have their little story arcs and you'll learn more about them all. But the Oracle is cool. Horace, I love. Frank is a really cool, my dad's name is Frank, and he's a construction worker, and he was kind of lightly based on him. And
oh, that makes it even perfect, because I when I was reading it, it felt like Frank was like a father figure to Bloodbath.
Yeah. And I feel like Bloodbath is a younger version of, you know, what I'd want to be.
Like, let's go, dude.
You know, so like, and it's kind of like the stuff you would say, all right, calm down, do this. And the kids, you know, Bloodbath, I know people haven't read it that are seeing this interview, but he's kind of like the new guy. He's taken over for Frank. He's the apprentice, and he's the executioner's apprentice, and he's about to be the new executioner, and Frank's retiring, and he's trying to tell him how to survive in this, you know, this maniac killing land, and really instill some lessons. And those lessons are like a framework for the writing for book one. And they kind of clicked and went together, and they were pretty easy to write. Because, like I said, it was based on a lot of the characters, just based on men I know in my life that have given me good lessons. And, you know, I wanted to honor that. So
I love that a lot. And, you know, I really got to give you a lot of props for your writing. I really enjoyed the Easter eggs you laid early on into the series. I really loved how you had Basil, like, storyboarding. Not only that, but, like, as the series, like, progressed, you know, we went from, like, cursive lettering to, like, actual, like, taped pieces. Like, she was, like, you know, like, she had a chance to script it out, and then she, like, had to tape because she was storyboarding. It's just, it was such an immersive experience, and it was, like, I don't even know how, like, sixth wall breaking. Like, there was just so many different levels to it. Like, I mean, how were you able to achieve this? I know, you know, this is your first time, like, creating a character that you really wanted to. This writing was out of this world, man.
Man, I appreciate that. For me, it was like, I took the writing very seriously. I didn't just say, like, I kind of like so many. I've got a lot of friends that I want to bring into crowdfunding, and a lot of times they just kind of have the sketch, but they don't have the story. Man, I thought about that story for 2 years before I started writing the script. And then when I wrote the script, I probably spent a solid 2 or 3 months just getting the script tight. And then when I drew it, like I said, I drew every panel on its own 11 by 17 board. I had a lot of time to refine the dialogue and think about the turns. And I'm very fortunate. I worked with Jonathan Hickman on the Manhattan Projects and a few other things. And it was always we would sit down and we would plot out issue 15, this happens, issue 6, this happens. And you kind of put these tent poles in the story, and then you can kind of meander a little bit, extend fight scenes or whatever. But when you get to 6 or when you get to page 60, you got to stick that landing. And seeing the way we worked, and we worked Marvel style. And if readers don't know, Marvel style is kind of like you get a paragraph and you got to illustrate the whole thing, versus like a movie script, which is a tight plot or whatever, mm-hmm. a real comic script. And I'd always like meander drawing and just do what I want and add sight gags. And Hickman was like, dude, I can tell we're just going to work Marvel style. And that let me contribute to a lot of the storytelling, a lot of the in the moment storytelling, like Einstein drinking a Bud Light or something, or whatever's going on, you know, or Feynman's prissy. And I can tell that's what Hickman needs out of the script. So I got him in the background looking at a mirror. But I'm doing it all the time, and they're just kind of moving around and being comedic on their own, but that's not necessarily in the script. And the way I always look at it is Jonathan had like the brain and I was the arm. I was the point of the machine down in the moments illustrating it. So I knew that I needed to step back out of living in the panel and really look at the whole story for John. And I know that, I know the last page of volume five, I've got Das Pastoras, who's the painter who finished the book and did the cover. He's painting the end sequences of every volume right now. And he's already done the five covers. So like, I know this story from front to back before I ever started drawing a panel. And once I had it locked in and I kind of knew where I was going, I started drawing 2 years ago. You know, I started drawing it. So
I love that. I love that so much. I got to ask, is there a He-Man influence with this? God, I love that so much. Because after that, it's just like carnage just ensued, dude. Perfect moment.
Masters of the Universe. So what I did was, I wanted, if I was going to do this, I kind of trust that, you know, like me and you, you could tell by your studio and my background, we're saturated in pop culture. And if we can trust that as creators and like know that you are primed to sell to you, right? Like I can make something just for me and it probably will resonate with other people my age or people I want to sell with like-minded that were raised with the same stuff, Muscle Figures or Mobius or Masters of the Universe or all that stuff. It was almost a point where I looked around my room and I'm like, did I arrange this room or is this room arranging me? You know, there's like, it's an inversion, right?
You start
you spend too much time alone and you start thinking completely inverted. And I was like, well, if this is all funneling into my head, I can get it down on the page and aesthetically it might be with the times as far as something that's marketable too. And that was a kind of a thought. But yeah, I loved He-Man as a kid, Masters of the Universe. And I don't even know if that has a genre, right? Like there's a great documentary on The Toys That Made Us.
Yeah.
There's another one with Masters of the Universe too. It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it is anymore. But basically, Mattel had got the Conan license. But once they saw Conan, they were like, this is too violent to sell to kids. But by then, Star Wars had been hot like in the late 70s or whatever. And, you know, they were doing their series of stuff. So they were like, well, we're going to add science fiction to it. So it's kind of like this muscle tech.
Is that why he had the, like, it looked like Luke Skywalker hair almost now that I think about it. Oh, my God.
And they had bought the Conan license so Conan couldn't come out with any toys to compete with him. So what they did was mash up muscles and technology, which is like muscle tech. I don't know what you call that, you know, and it's got a little magic in it, too. And so Masters of the Universe is actually like insane. It holds everything. It's got a little bit of everything. There's characters that represent, there's dinosaur characters, there's magic characters, there's technological people. It just holds everything. And I call it muscle tech for short. And I knew that with John, I love world building drawing wise. And I was just going to draw all the stuff I love, you know, and that was kind of the thing. And John's got a catchphrase. It's not, I have the power. It's full power. And the way I set that up, it was fun in the book. I had like someone kind of understated, like, what did that guy used to say before you knock him out? Full power. And you think it's like something a drunk says, right? But when he yells it in John, like, he goes on to kill like 1,000 people. So
out of all the brutal weapons out there, why would John choose an axe? Like, what about the axe is, you know, that about for him?
This is a weird answer, but I'll tell you, man, I knew what I wanted. I'm a big Alan Moore fan and I love all that esoteric stuff he does and the whole hermetic stuff. And he has that line that's to spell is simply to spell. And I believe that, you know, like if you can read something and it'll make you cry, it'll put you in a different state of mind. You might be so good at manipulating people that you could speak words into their head and they could off themselves, which is what people have done when they bully and stuff. Like that's a real power. Well, I said, well, to draw them to me, I'm going to draw really well. And I thought if I'm fishing for readers, a reader like myself, an axe looks like a hook. And if it had blood and guts on it, looked like a lure.
I love that.
It would really attract me. And I said, well, I need a lot of lures because I need a lot of readers. So hence a cape with like 50-100 axes in it. So yeah,
that was the most bombastic part. Like as soon as I seen that, I was like, yep, this is 100%. Like this was made for me. And the blood in this is like Dexter level. Like it's not like just blood, just like you could tell each dream has its own purpose. And like there was a part where he hits the water and the blood is like mixing with the water off of him. And I'm like, dude, this is just insanely detailed.
Yeah, that detail, I'm still not as good as I want art-wise. I've gotten a lot better. Obviously, I've worked at Marvel and DC and Image, so I know that I'm good. But the guys that I love, Mobius, Frank Quietly, Darrow, I don't know if those guys are catchable. They're so good. But I mean, my goal is always to try to catch them. I always say this, when you look at a guy like Frank Quietly, like you could steal the outside aesthetics. You could steal the white icing, right? But once you bite into the cake, it ain't the same. Like the cartooning's not quite as good as his. And there might be guys like me, Chris Burnham, Ramon Villalobos. We're kind of getting in that Mobius, Frank Quietly tree. And that's real dangerous because it's like you think you're on the first floor of a building, your belly up next to it, you're looking up, and you think, oh, he's only 10 stories ahead. The problem is every floor you go up, you also get to take a step back because you get better as an artist. You're like, holy crap, he's actually 20 up. Let me go up another floor. Mm-hmm. And you take another step back and you're like, holy shit, he's on top of that building. And then you do it again and you're like, these guys aren't catchable. And it's kind of like it almost doesn't matter in comics in a way. Like you can be Chris Ware and you can be the original Nintendo and 8-bit graphic and tell beautiful stories. And then when we get down that path of craft, we're like, I'm going to draw better and better. We're increasing our pixels, 32, 64, Nintendo 64, PS2, PS3. And you start realizing that some of these guys' processors are just like, you ain't got that processor.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, yeah.
And that was another thing too, is like, I knew I was always going to be chasing those guys if I wasn't going to write and draw and use the other part, like stacking the other thing I have, which is, I do love to write. I do have a sense of humor that's kind of funny or at least attracted my wife. I got one that way, you know? So like,
it's all that matters, right?
It wasn't my face. We know that, you know? So I was like, if I can add my humor to this art, and maybe some of my heart to this art and with my writing and what, and I need to say something, maybe that stack of talents then separates me into my own thing. And then if I can go into the crowdfunding space and have a thoughtful interview and manipulate people or whatever you do when you sell, I don't know. I'm not 100% comfortable with it, but I just try to be honest. I think honestly, if I give any advice, anyone, honesty is like the most attractive thing.
Yeah.
You're self-deprecating or whatever in your stories. It's almost like a trick. Like I think people come to honesty like a moth to a flame. And in the inverse, if you lie to people, people will remember it because it's like, it's so unattractive, you know, like if you're too pompous or whatever. So I just try to be humble and try to speak the truth as much as possible. And if I had problems writing or drawing or insecurities, I always just say it. And it is what it is, you know? I have this thing where like, I love trying to get better. So like, I know I'm not as good as Quietly, but don't think I'm not, don't think I'm sleeping on him. I'm still trying to catch him. You know what I mean? And I know it's a fool's errand, but I'm going on that errand, baby. You know what I mean?
You got to, because if you don't, then it's just another thing that you regret, right? You sit back and think like, what if I did go for it? You know, I could have achieved that. And I think you did achieve greatness with this. This is one hell of a campaign. The best thing about this show is we spend time talking about you, talking about your book, and then dive into the campaign, because to me it's not like manipulating. We're showing people who you actually are, getting them comfortable with the creator, and then we go into the campaign. So you know, if they're gonna back because they like you as a creator, you know. So I think right there would be a perfect segue. Let's pull up the campaign on Zoop and see what all the hype is about. So we are taking a moment to look at the Zoop campaign for Axe Wielder John. Right here is the link for everyone that is watching. Be sure to check this out with us. If you're unable to back, put this on Facebook and Twitter. Word of mouth is 100% free. And I know you're going to have a friend who loves this because it is one hell of a read. Currently, oh my God, 100,733, I can't even say that number. That is huge. 1,306 supporters and 14 days left to go. I mean, dude, you have an audience who is rallying behind you. How do you feel to have this project just explode off the ground?
Man, it was a huge gamble going in the crowdfunding space. And I can't thank Zoop enough. My art rep, Felix Comic Art, we sold some art through there that did really well too. And obviously the art collecting community, but the fans, the backers, the podcasters, the YouTubers who have helped me get it out there. It means the world. We sold five copy bundles to even the comic book stores, which I always feel weird about because I love comic book stores, but crowdfunding, I don't want to cut them out. So we gave them like this huge discount and doing free sketches for them. And we sold over 500 copies to comic book stores as well.
Wow.
So over 1,800 copies for an oversized hardcover on an unknown property. That would put us in like the top 10 if it was like the Comicron numbers. it would have been a top, it would be a top 10, you know, in the last year, it would have put us in the top 10. And then obviously the number's huge, you know, we're printing a lot, you know, I'm overprinting and I invested a lot. I spent 2 years working on it. It's complete. I've paid better than Marvel and DC rates to all my creatives.
That's awesome.
I brought in an Eisner Award winning editor to help me with everything, the scheduling. And he's a great story guy, Chris Stevens. Painted covers by Das Pastoras, who's like a legendary master. He's not known in the States, but to me, he's one of my favorites. He's mm-hmm. been working since the Mobius Metal Herlant days. And he's like illustrating our epilogue sequences in each story. And he wasn't cheap, you know? So like, I just put everything I had into it. And I was lucky. I love original art. And what I did to fund this was I would sell off my original art or some of my collection. And luckily original art's gone up in value. So I was able to fund it, but you know, it does suck selling your art.
Yeah.
So I rolled all that into it, you know, and thinking, well, I'm going to invest this in this and I'm hoping to get something out of it. And I just knew I was going to try to do it the best I could and utilize everything I thought, you know, stick your finger in the wind and be like, this is how I see everyone kind of as, I've always seen us as entrepreneurs. We're not really on teams,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of times the creatives are like, jump on Team Marvel or Team DC. But the, you know, we've seen what happens if you stay too long with any of those companies, you know, I love them. I love playing with those action figures. I want to play with those characters on the page. But you know, if you stay too long, it's not like they're really there for you when you're an old man. And I just really wanted a character that was mine. And I thought, well, how about one with a hideous scar, you know? So there's John on the front page looking like a bloody stuff.
I love it. And the name is so badass. I mean, it's so badass that in the book itself, it's acknowledged like this name is just beastly. Like, how'd you come up with it?
I just thought Axewater was cool. You know, whenever you would play those Dungeons and Dragons game, everyone would pick the main hero and we would always get that stumpy axe wielder in Lord of the Rings. I don't want a 3 foot tall, you know,
what's his name? Something like that.
Yeah. He's like, get my axe, get out of here, dude. Like an axe is awesome. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if like an axe was ever done right. You know? And I was like, well, I know people use axes all the time, but they don't use 100 axes at once, you know what I mean? And I was like, I'll give him that. And I like the shark guard, the shark jaw mm-hmm. neck guard was kind of cool. And it was kind of simple. And really, like, if you look at a Two-Face or a Jonah Hex, there's only a handful of guys that have a really distinct scar that's not just like that little line over the bridge of the nose, but really gouge them. And those are unforgettable characters. And yes. I needed John to have that unforgettable type mark where like there's no way you're going to think about this character. He's got like two or three good visual anchor points, his crazy face, his oversized mustache. Yeah. And then also, you know, the axes. And I just thought, man, and there was something about this where I was like, man, I'm going 100%. And I was like, well, I'm going to go 100% crazy then, you know?
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
That was part of it with John. So, and then go ahead.
Oh, I was when I first because Zoop, shout out to Zoop for setting this up. And I remember when you put out a post on Twitter too. I was in the works of talking to John, and I seen you tweet this out, and you were looking for reviewers of any size. And I was like, this is the guy, because like I love that. It doesn't like for me. I love people who are willing to talk to anybody, because everybody has a voice, right?
Dude, everyone has a voice, and Mark Nelson, who's really a great illustrator, has a book on Zoop now. And he's launching, and he's a little older than me, and he had some trepidations about crowdfunding. And I'm like, dude, do every show. It isn't like someone might say, I mean, you have a good size show, but some people only have like 15 followers. You know, they don't have a lot. And I would still do their shows because it's a campaign to saturate the market.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a campaign to be like, that's, I could just do a sketch during that time and then talk to 15 people. No, dude. You are the voice of this thing getting out there, and you're going to meet people, make a connection. And like, I can tell you're going to be very successful. Like, if you're already pretty successful, but like you have a passion and an understanding of the medium and an energy. And like you said, 300, 400 interviews under your belt, you know how to talk to people, you know how to let them talk, you know how to cut them off when they talk too much like I do. But what I'm saying is like, You might have 40,000, 50,000, 100,000 by the next time I have book two or book three out. Why would I avoid any small show because the small guy is going to be the big guy. You know, that's just how it works.
I used to have 15 followers too, you know?
Yeah, I know. I know. And I would think like, I would think, let me get someone who's got 15 followers and do a good interview for them and then send my audience to them now. And then later when they grow it and then maybe they get 30 or 40 more and I send all my friends to them and say, you got to do this guy's show. And then let's say they have 300 and now all of my friends' fan base, all of my fellow creatives' fan bases are under there that might not have been mine. But then when I go back and pitch, now they could be mine. And if we started working in like terms of the whole pie instead of the shrinking pie or this isn't worth my time, like you got to saturate the market. The market has a lot of stuff in it. The pie isn't shrinking. But if you look at it that way, it will shrink for you. I just see like every chance I get to talk about John. One, I love him and I love talking about myself and my book. That's cool. I know it's not good ego-wise, but I do love the stuff and I've invested 2 years into it. I want to talk about it.
I think it's rightfully deserved. I mean, this, you have a badass product. There is so much goodness in this. Like, there's parts of it I want to talk about, but I'm like, I don't know if it's spoiler. I don't know if it's...
No, you
like,
can talk about it. There's only one.
Gary is such an awesome character, and I love that he just refuses to go by Gary. He's like, no, I'm the Puzzler. Don't you dare call me that.
The Puzzler, yeah. The Puzzler was fun, man. We needed to add some, there was always this dark mystery to the castle in my head. And my assistant, Ken, who would come over and help me do little things in the office, he was like, man, you've been talking about this for 2 years, but there's no real mystery about the castle. And I'm like, oh, well, I got this character, the Puzzler, that I've designed a long time ago. And he would be a perfect, like, sidekick to the main villain, Lord Fang. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, he's the one that's going to, you know, ruminate and overtalk about the dark machinations of the castle, and then him and Horace have a beef, and that beef, you know, culminates later. And
you gave him like such a human name, like the most bland human name possible. That was my favorite part.
Yeah, I'm friends with this artist Gary Brown, who does Marvel and DC work all the time and image work.
Oh, God, Gary, if you're watching, I'm sorry.
And I was like, Gary, I got a guy I'm gonna name after you, and Axe Wielder. So I thought Gary's just such a bland, like he wants to be called the Puzzler, but his name is Gary. It just, there's a good juxtaposition. And I love that. I love everything is balanced, you know, like John, there's something in John that really balances this machismo figure with a softness, right? There's like, it's a spoiler, so we can't really talk about it, but there's everything is like, this guy's this, but he's also this. And I think people are more than one dimension. And if, let's say, if you're writing a song, you're not just going to have a drum beat. You just got pot and pans. But if you have add some harmony, some femininity, some melody to it, now you've got a complete whole. You got something that's more realistic to a character that would be in the real world. So a bland name like Gary, but a design that is absolutely nuts because he's made of puzzle pieces that are missing. You know?
Speaking about Gary, I mean, I noticed it looked like maybe they were chapter pages, but each, like, there was certain pages that had a puzzle piece on it. Can we talk about the symbolism behind them?
Oh yeah, so like the whole thing, the motif of John is, you know, the opening papers, which you guys didn't get in the PDF, but we actually scanned in a puzzle board, and then the chapter breaks by Ben Didier, or however you say his name, like a top end designer. He went and illustrated each puzzle piece. And if you go back and look, let's say before Frank designed is revealed, you'll see that Frank walked around like a humanoid man. And this might be a spoiler, but he's not quite a humanoid man. Well, in his puzzle piece, every chapter break, instead of a name, it's an illustration. And it's a hint at an upcoming piece of the puzzle you're about to get.
I love
and
that.
So what we did, or when me and my wife's a mystery writer, and so we're always talking about, there's a third level to mystery writing. It's not just what you're putting on the page and what you want in their head. It's then you got to get in their head, you know, from afar and be like, they're probably thinking this with this red herring or this. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there's like an extra little game you're playing with mystery. And so like, there's a lot of bits of John where I look at, like, I'm showing you this story, and as it passes, it flips, and I show you this story, and then it flips, and I show you this. And I'm like taking the story and kind of rotating it, and each, I didn't really, you know, I could have used names for the chapter breaks, but I really wanted the illustrations. So the keen reader will see that there's a little hint, and it's almost impossible to guess what it's going to be because a lot of the things, I'm not being completely fair with the red herrings. I'm just like, this is what they're saying about him. this is what's happening. Oh, this, and that kind of fits in. You would never guess, I would assume. Mm-hmm. But I really like the idea of that. And then the puzzler, Gary, is going to know, he's one of the only characters that knows the whole mystery of the castle and what Lord Fang is actually up to. There's like a deeper, there's a big, big story with him and Lord Fang and what's actually going on. And John knows what it is too. That's why John's on the run. And the care, and you know, the readers will know what that is by the end of book three. But there's going to be an adventure he goes on in the meantime, but there's an over, it's kind of like seasons, right? You get mm-hmm. an episodic show, but overall there's like a story, a complete story that's being told, and the puzzles just kind of work thematically. And I kind of liked it. So.
No, I did too. And I, you know, it was one of those things too, like, because I remember after the first, I think, page, there was like a whole page just with puzzle pieces. And I don't think they were drawn in. It's just, and I just remember seeing, I'm like, okay, like, I wonder what this has anything to do.
Pretentious. Look at this pretentious first time writer with his like, puzzle pieces.
What's Nick doing here? No, yeah. You know, and everything about this, I love the seeds that you planted early on. Like every seed that you planted paid off. And the twist, you know, obviously we won't spoil anything, but I wasn't prepared. We were talking backstage and I was like, I want to ask you this question. And then you like took my wildest imagination and just flipped it around. And I was like, oh my goodness. But before we, I could fanboy about this all day. Let's check out these rewards. So we have, you can get the digital copy of this for $18, 168 pages, a whopping deal right there. Most crowdfunding, you're paying what, $10 for a 20 issue comic. So for 18, you can get digital. The hardcover is $40, the signed hardcover at $55. We love retailer bundle at $100, and then some awesome trading cards. So what type of characters can we see on these cards?
So I've got painted illustrations from Das Pastoras, and I've got some really high-end Marvel DC guys that have drawn John. And in the pack, I'm doing I kind of drew John, but only inked his blood in red. And so I printed that card and I'm using a quick Sharpie and like doing an original sketch on one of the cards. So you get like a sketch in there and you get a pack and they all got the foil printing. I'm buying the foil. The most expensive thing was buying the foil wrappers, you know? And so
it's coming in a pack.
Yeah, sealed pack. Well, they're unsealed, and then we got to glue them shut individually.
That's so cool, dude. I've heard trading cards, but the fact that you have to open it is such a cool experience. Like opening Pokemon cards.
I
love trading
cards as a kid, so I was like, I got to have this. But man, you got to order a lot to get it down in price. And now I'm like at a point where we're waiting for the book to print, and mm-hmm. I still got more time, so I'm like, I'm gonna do more cards while I'm waiting. it's made for like a 20 pack of cards or a 15 mm-hmm. pack of cards, and there's like six. And I'm like, man, I can do one of my face drawing at the drawing table.
That'd be so cool.
Card, and I can do one for the company, and I can do like stickers. So it's probably going to expand. The real good deal for retailers, if any retailers hear this, is on the retailer bundles, you're getting them half off, which is what Diamond would do. But I'm signing them, and there's a book plate in each one, and I'm doing a little 3-inch head sketch of John in every book. So that's really what I'm going to be doing. The printer's mailing that to me. I should be getting it in a couple of days where that's I'm going to be so drawing cool. for like the next 3 weeks. John's head 800 times. We had to cut it off for fans, the remarks, because we were up to like, you know, I'm going to be doing about 800 of them. So it's kind of crazy.
Oh my God.
But also on the hardcover deal, the hardcover comes with a PDF now. Since we're a little late waiting for the printer and the shipping problems with COVID and whatnot, the book is finished and the PDF is ready. So you'll get that right away. So we sent the PDF out early to the fans while they wait on the hardcover. So if you do order the hardcover, it'll come with the PDF. Just write Zoop and they'll send you the PDF, or write me on Twitter and I'll link you to it. I got it up in my Dropbox and I've been sending it out to people for reviews and any fans that missed the email from Zoop. So
you sent it to me just for retweeting. I was like, dude, this is awesome. Like,
dude, thanks for having me on, man. But I feel like now I did the work. I think I'm proud of the work. So now I've got to get people to read the thing, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm going to use it any way I can, you know? I'm just hoping no one puts it on like a pirate site. Like, please don't do that, you know? Like, I've got big plans for John and I don't want to like, and I don't even know if that's bad, but like, I got other plans for the PDF. And I, you know, down the line in a couple of years, if I'm on book two or three, maybe I do have to give away one to sell book two and three, right? And maybe that could be a perk in a later campaign. And I don't want to undercut that, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So like that's a thought there, but I mean I trust the fans and I'm excited. I'm really just excited for people to read it. So yeah.
And then we have Unpainted Axe Wielder John Resin Bust as well. This is, dude, this is, you have such awesome merch. Only $20 as well. Perfect price. How big is this going to be?
Well, that's the file. So we,
oh, the file.
So like we sold three of those, but they were like a loss leader. I said, okay, we'll charge $200. It was a 10-inch bust, and mm-hmm. I've got them printed. But by the time I went to commission them, the guy told me it'd be like $50. And then he's like, whoa, 10 inches. I didn't know you meant 10. I didn't know it was 10 inches. I thought this was going to be like 5 inches. And apparently it gets like incrementally more expensive.
Oh,
and
goodness.
By the time I printed them out, they cost me $185. Well, Zoop takes 25%. So I lost money on the bus, but what Zoop did was just offer the STL file. So you can resize it and print it whatever size.
Yeah,
you want.
Yeah, as big as you want. You do 3D printing as well?
I got buddies that do it, and currently my wife won't let me get one because she know I'll spend all my time doing it. And
dude, they are addicting.
I know. And I'm, dude, I
actually, put it out this little cat like right here.
I know, dude. I'll get Zoop to send you the STL for that for free. But even better, we're going full action figure next year with John.
Oh, perfect.
But it's like a huge number because we got to machine the parts. It's like $60,000. Mm-hmm. And I need readers for that. So for the next year, I'm going to try to get John into many hands as possible and make that happen. But it's a 7-inch fully articulate action figure. I signed a contract for it already. And so, yeah, it's going to be a challenge to get it done. But that'll come next year, so I'm excited about that.
Dude, little Nick right now is screaming in joy. Your own action figure, that is such a cool thing. Holy crap, Nick, that is remarkable. Here are some quick add-ons as well. Just gorgeous, gorgeous. Are these prints?
Yeah, so those are Geely prints, the top four. But the real cool one is I've got these. I worked with the late, great Seth Fisher's brother. Asa Fisher is a lithographer, mm-hmm. and he reached out to me because he knew I was a fan of his brother. And he said, do you want to take one image from John and make a limited run of like 25 lithographs? And lithographs in galleries are very expensive. I would never thought my work would be on a lithograph. You know, they cost like $500. I was like, well, the comic art community probably ain't going to pay $500, but let's come up with a low number. And man, he took the work, he blew it up. It took like weeks for the ink to dry. He worked each one by hand, sent them to me, signed them. And so there's this limited edition print run of John, a lithograph by one of my absolute art heroes, Seth Fisher. And he did Wheel World and he did Batman Snow. He did a lot of work for DC. He did Fantastic Four Big in Japan, where they fight a bunch of kaijus.
Oh, and, that's so cool.
And he ended up passing away young. And he was a huge influence on me early on. And so for Asa to reach out and say he wanted to work with me, I'm like, okay, we'll figure something out. And so with that, I'm not making any money on it. I just said, Asa, whatever the minimum for you to get your costs back. And even the pieces of paper that he buys, they're like French cotton paper that costs like $60 a piece. So he's not making much either, but we just kind of did that for fans. So, and I just told him he can keep any of the money to recoup his costs and his time. But I told him he had to give me one of them. So I get one mm-hmm. of them out of it. So, but that's that one I'm really excited about. And it's really cool. So, and they're beautiful. Like I got them here at the house signed, and I'm going to mail them back to him to mail out to everyone individually. So,
that's so awesome.
Yeah, they look really good. And like my,
you got one near you?
They're in the other room.
If you got to pull them out, no big deal.
I just packaged them back up after signing, and I taped mm-hmm. the whole box. And I'm like, if I cut it open, it's gonna be terrible. But like, if you scroll back to the first cover, I bought that first cover from Das Pastoras, and I told you it looks like a bloody toe. Mm-hmm. And my wife is like, you can't hang that in the house. You know what I mean? so the lithograph is what I get to hang though. So the lithograph's a little bit sweeter.
And it's huge too.
Yeah, they're enormous. They're
22
like,
by 30.
Yeah, they're really large, and they look gorgeous. And I did the gray work on them. He created an extra plate to press the gray on there to go. We put the gray down, then the ink on top, and they look fantastic. That's the item that's like the most prestigious item, other than the original. All the original art sold, and you know I did really good on that. And that was thanks to Felix and the art collecting community. And there were some pages that I added some fight scenes to that I sent to Felix Comic Art, and he'll probably post those in the next little while. But man, it's been really cool, man. Like Brian K. Vaughn ordered it. David Cho, who's the famous, probably one of the most richest, famous artists in the world, ordered it. Frank quietly read it, and he said it inspired him, and it was the way comics should be.
Wow.
So some really great responses, and some really big people in the Hollywood side of stuff have read it now, and I've had people reach out. So hopefully we make it a thing, man.
I love it. And then last but not least, we have a project consultation, work with New York Times, bestselling artist and creator. So of ex, Wielder John and Nick himself. So what type of consultation, can they expect, for this?
Well, this is with, Chris Stevens, who's my editor who's won two Eisners, and me. And what we're going to do is, if you have a character or a story that you want to develop, you can be a writer, you can be an artist. And the idea is, we want to workshop just like we did with John, with me, with other people. And we thought it'd be a cool perk. I have a teaching degree in art. And I love giving free lessons all the time. These ain't free, unfortunately, yeah. but Chris is going to organize these, and you send in your story, and let's say you're a writer, and Chris is pretty hardcore. Like, we got to get the right artist for it. You got to find the right artist. I can help you find the right artist, but he knows their page rates and all that. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to make a professional book, or if you just want to make your best book, like I did with John, or if you're an artist that wants to start and do it. And so it's going to be two consultations. We talk like this for an hour. We download everything that you want out of your book. We go back, I overdraw and give you notes if you're an artist, or if you have an artist on your team that you want me to give notes to. And then Chris and I help with story. You know, you send us the story. This turn might work here. Oh, if you don't say this here, move it here. Mm-hmm. And me and Chris will get with you in workshop. And then we go back for the second one, another hour, hour and a half, however long it takes. And we show you what we think to make it the best book possible. If there's someone in his Rolodex that he thinks it might work within your budget. And Chris knows everyone in comics. If you don't know, he did that oversized Little Nemo book, mm-hmm. that won a couple Eisners. And it has like 200, 300 creators in it. It won the Eisner for best anthology. And when you're an editor that puts together an anthology and you work with Bill Sienkiewicz and Paul Pope and everybody, then he becomes, you know, rubs elbows with them, becomes their buddies. And that's how we got a lot of our pool quotes. He would send out the PDF to Bill Sienkiewicz, and we got some good remarks from a lot of the top people in the industry. And that was really thanks to Chris from his connections. And so, like, if you have the budget, you have access to some of those people. If you don't have the budget, and he knows a bunch of aspiring guys, and basically just do what we want to do. And I created a label called Kuroshi Comics, which means to die from overwork, and I was going to do this or die trying. And he's going to be the editor in chief of that company. I'm the publisher, and we're eventually going to go to one of the big publishers. We've got some negotiations going on there, and we're going to develop books for it. And basically I want nothing out of it. I'm not going to take anyone's IP. I don't mm-hmm. believe in that. But I want cool books next to John, you know, and the idea would be we crowdfund beautiful oversized hardcovers like we've done with John. In a year or two, we put the soft cover out. Let's say it's under top five publisher, but their imprint, my imprint, Kuroshi. That's my goal with John. And we've got that kind of offer on the table. So we're going to do that in the future. But this is kind of like a practice run for us, too, to see how we can help people develop their story. And if that interests you as a creator, I mean, I don't think you can beat it, you know, like, but
I mean, that's a pretty good price for the amount of knowledge, and like, just knowledge is power in this industry. Knowing the right people who know the right people is just as important, too. And I loved Chris's notes at the very, very end of the book, your original script. You're talking about Basil, like how you wanted lettering, and he's like, no, don't do that. Like, I loved it so much. Like, so, I mean, he makes some outstanding notes as well. Awesome tears, man. Holy crap. So there's so much I wanted to ask. And before we do that, let's take a look at some of this art. So when you design, like, what type of process do you put yourself in? Like, how does your routine look like?
With designing stuff, I try to just trust myself. Like, I've absorbed so much pop culture that I just think that I'll come out. It'll come out, you know, 5% original and a mix of 95% five other things I like. I knew like that moment there that he was going to look like. I knew what that moment meant when I drew that page early, because there's a reveal before that, you know, before that. That's cool. That I think works really good in the book, but I wanted that to look like the skulls that he's talking to are like, because, you know, the whole legend with John is that he's cursed to fall in love with the heads of his many victims. So he's talking to skulls. And I thought it'd look really cool if he was like a mama bird with the chirp, and it's called the chirping skulls of Black Rock. So like if he was in a nest, but also that his one moment where he gets to relax from killing people, even then his barge, which is a dead monster, is getting eaten out from under him from sharks. Like there's no moment to rest in his, in this world. And I really wanted to like hit that moment and draw it, you know, really well.
Because this is the thing he chops in half when they're in the air, right?
Yeah. So like there was a battle there. Like I knew he chopped him in half and I had been drawing the blood, but I love the colors by Mike Garland so much. I didn't have the heart to tell him to go back and add a bunch of blood. I was like, it kind of looks like a peaceful shot. And I was like, okay, I'll just assume the monster's bled out by then, you know?
And I love, like,
we just have to pretend that the other half is the half that's sold in half. You know what I mean?
I love how convoluted his history gets too, through like just the myth and legends, like how he's cursed to talk to the people he kills. It's just, I love just how many different layers there are to just John's character. One of my favorite moments too is before he gets his face ripped off, it looks like he's doing like a reverse, like Walls of Jericho to this huge ass snake. I'm like, he's grabbing the fangs and I'm just like, dude, this is, and you were talking about your love of like Macho Men and like MMA and stuff. I'm like, dude, this he had to watch like Attitude Era.
Yeah. I mean, you call it the Walls of Jericho. I call it the Lion Tamer from back in the day, you know? But yeah, it's the same move. Man, I love Scott Steiner. Scott Steiner was like Big Papa Pump. I love that NWO era back in the day. And then that transferred over to the WWF stuff, WWE now. I haven't followed it in a long time. Now, man, I'm addicted to the shoot interviews, like hearing the road stories. Like I'm more like listening to the old guys I love watch wrestling, and hearing what was actually going on backstage is really, you know, when you draw all day, you're always looking for more content. And so those podcasts are great.
I used to watch that when I was a kid so religiously. And like the moment I found out it was like scripted, I was like, I think I was more heartbroken that Stone Cold Steve Austin was scripted, a scripted character and not real. Like, I'm sure he's just as crazy, but like that, that was Santa Claus. I was like, oh my God, dude, the Viper, like, let's go, dude. Like,
yeah, man. Yeah. And then there's extras in the back. Everyone that did a pinup online, what happened was a couple of professionals did some drawings of John for me, Chris Somney, Dave Marquez, and that kind of rolled into other people doing it. And during the campaign, while it was running, like we had like 100 probably people on Instagram just started drawing them because they liked the design. Mm-hmm. And that created great marketing for the campaign. And I asked everyone if they wanted to be in the book to mail it to me. And so like 60 artist emailed me a best scan, and those people that did, I tried to squeeze them in. So we put 60 pinups on across 20 pages in the back. So there's a bunch of cool artist pinups, and I drew it the best I could. It's high action, it's super manly, it's a love letter to, you know, to a lot of the father figures in my life, kind of honoring the machismo stuff but balancing it with a femininity a little bit, you know. Because as a new dad, like for me, when I set out to make the book, I was telling you beforehand that my daughter got sick. We were in the NICU. She had all these complications. She's better now, so everything's fine. But when I was there, I was bored and kind of doodling, and I started drawing John. And when she got better, I just told myself, I'm gonna make this. I'm gonna apply some meaning to the situation. I'm never gonna be, knock on wood, I had never been in a situation like that before. And I have something to say now about I got a different perspective on what my dad was going through, and what I'm going through now. And I'm going to put this into a story, and I'm going to put it in the story with this character. And he came to me in my time of need. And I was like, I'll never get another moment like this as a new dad to have a design float down from the ether into my sketchbook. So I'm going to make it a thing, you know, I'm going to give this my best swing. And that meant hiring the best people, paying them what they wanted, not what they settled on, but what they wanted. I always try to give them, I never negotiated down. I wanted them all to do their best work. I set out to do my best work, and you can see the detail in it, you know. Detail's like a trick, you know, like I know I rely on it too much, but I wanted to get as much attention as possible.
Like, this scene right here, I'm not trying to cut you off, but, like, speaking of detail, this scene right here where they're feeding the head to the spider, like, I had a hard time looking away. Like, look how small this square is, and look just how detailed that is. There's so much going on the walls and on the floor. Like, how long did this take you to do?
It took a while. And like I said, each one of those panels is on its own 11 by 17. And for perspective, every page in a comic book is usually drawn oversized at 11 by 17. But I did it three times bigger than that. So that's how. And then I used the smallest microns that they make to ink the entire book. So it took a while, but I balanced it out with like he delivers a cool line when he looks over his shoulder. And so like that shot didn't take as long as the long shots. But overall, man, I can only do about two pages a week. And that's why it took so long, because sometimes it was a page a week if it had a crazy amount of detail, like with all the figures and figuring out all the figure work with 100 characters, that could take like a week and a half for a single page. So yeah, it was a lot of work, but I'm excited that people get to read it now. And man, I thank you for letting me come on here and yap and try to sell it to your audience. So I love it.
And like I said, I could talk to you all day about this. There's just so much I feel like we haven't even like begun to scratch the surface of. Like I wanted to dive into like fight sequences because there's so much. But we do have to eventually be wrapping up. Man, we're about over an hour right now. So Nick, for anyone who might be on the fence about backing, if you just had a few moments to kind of reach out and say something to them, what would you like to say?
I mean, Axe Wielder John is my passion project. It's a completely, I know the ending of it. It's five volumes. The first volume's a lot of fun. It's got a lot of heart. I don't know if any book's ever been drawn at with every page 3 feet tall. So it's kind of a spectacle. It's a love letter to a lot of the men in my life. It's got a cool legend. It's got a crazy character. And it's my writer artist debut. And I believe in speaking your reality. And so he's going to be my avatar in the comic book industry. He ain't going away. So if you get on board now, you can say, I'm a big indie music fan. You can say you listened to Elliott Smith when it was his EP album or whatever, he's not going away, and he's only going to get bigger. And I would love your support. Money's energy. It's called currency, just like electricity runs through current. I need the energy to fund the next books, the toys, everything I want from it. I know we've done well, but I've sunk $35,000 into it. Zook takes 25%. I've worked on it for 2 years. So it's not as big as a number as it looks, and printing it and shipping it and all that costs money too.
Oh, so, all the merch too.
The merch. And so we're doing well, but, and I had someone ask me that. They were like, why are you reopening it before the print? Because I'm overprinting it. One, I'm printing like an extra 1,000 copies. And also, like, I don't think the pie shrinks. I think that I want this to, if you're a fan and you love great comics and you love machismo, and hopefully there's some softness in there too, but really violent, fun comics. I think you'll love the book. I hope you'll love the book. And your support just means I get to do more of it. It wouldn't exist without the fans. It wouldn't exist without the people allowing me to pitch to fans. So thank you, Cody. And it just means the world. You guys are giving me the energy to make this happen. So if you support it, I'd love it. If you don't, tell someone about it. And if you didn't get this far, oh well, you'll see it.
Hopefully you got it this far. If you didn't, we're going to make you back one way or another. So, Nick, what's next for you in 2023? I know you said you had four more volumes of Axe Wielder John. Is that the case for the rest of the year? Or is there any other projects up your sleeve?
Yeah, no, Axe Wielder John all the time. I plan on doing this for the next 5 to 7 years of my career. I do covers. I've got a few small side gigs here and there. But my focus is going to be on John, and then really the campaign, the success from the campaigns, I'm rolling all that into the next one. So I'll roll this dice five times in a row and see if I crap out or not.
Let's go. So Nick, you mentioned you're a teacher. One of my favorite parts of the show is where I get to ask a little bit of advice, because it's not all, creator and talking about the book. Sometimes there are people who are listening who just want to learn a little bit about what they're trying to achieve. So with that in mind, for anyone out there who's looking to get started with their very, very first book, what would be the biggest piece of advice you could offer them?
The best thing you can do. I didn't really start full time. I'm 40 now. I didn't start full time in comics till I was 30. I had office jobs and stuff. I used to get down about that. and I would be like, I'm wasting all this time, like, working. Then what you do is you treat that job, you do it right, but you treat it as a means to fly to the conventions, bet on yourself, take the time you can, your vacations, and enter contests, buy the how-to books. You will never regret betting on yourself. It's not unlike the gym. I know I need to listen to that, but you might not want to do it at first, but if you go, you feel better. For some people, it's church. You might not want to go to church, but you go, you don't feel bad, you know, like you feel a little better, you know, like investing in yourself will pay off in the end. And my teaching philosophy was art is learnable whenever I was going into the teaching stuff. And basically you can teach a sixth, seventh, eighth grader a couple of foundational 3D cubes, stack them, build a cartoon character. And they go from thinking they can't draw to being the third, maybe the second best artist in the class in one or two lessons. And same thing for you. You're going to find something at your level. If you're looking on YouTube, if you're finding the right books, and you're going to develop yourself, you're going to do it with interviews, maybe writing wise. I'm going to do it with drawing, writing wise too. You know, for me, when I was setting out to write, I'm reading Save the Cat. I'm reading On Writing by Stephen King. I'm immersed in this stuff. I'm when I'm reading media now, I can only see like, oh, if they would have done this, this would have worked. Oh, they set that up this way. You start not being able to enjoy media anymore, but everything becomes a lesson. And don't just zone out, you know, stay focused and bet on yourself. Bet on yourself and do your best work. If you're doing your best work, that means you're not quite satisfied the next time you sit down because you got better. And the only person you ever got to beat is yourself. If you look at Frank Quietly or Mobius when you start, you'll feel like an ant. But if you're thinking, I'm doing this a little better than the day before, mm-hmm. a little day before, that builds, that stacks, and you get better. And that's the game. The game is beating yourself and ain't beating anyone else. It's finding your own path and betting on yourself. That's my advice.
Wow. Awesome advice. I mean, I'm 33, got my books right here. You know, I'm trying to do the damn thing too. I think I'm going to write something as soon as we're done with this. Holy crap. Nick, before we let you go though, you know, what are you reading? What are you watching? Do you play, you know, any video games? I know you're, you know, you're a dad, so that kind of is hard to find that time. But when you do, you know, what are you consuming?
And two Australian shows, since I'm a dad. Bluey is the best freaking kids show ever. Makes my wife cry all the time. And then we just found Mr. In Between on Hulu, and it is mm-hmm. great. If you love Justified, I put it at Justified's level. It's about a hitman who's raising a daughter, and he's got a brother with a kind of like Lou Gehrig's disease. He's in mm-hmm. bad shape, but he's a hitman too. And he's trying to balance like life duties and his hitman job.
If you like, love that so much. That's such an awesome concept.
Dude, if you like anti-heroes, it's three seasons. It's written really tight, a little bit episodic. They're short episodes, 25 minutes, which is good if you got kids like me. So me and my wife are like, man, we're watching two Australian shows right now. That's what I'm doing. I haven't played video games in years. I love me some Guitar Hero. You know, I used mm-hmm. to play that all the time, but I gave that away to some nephews and they never brought it back, of course. So I haven't played games in a while. But yeah, those are the two things I like right now. Yeah, that's about it.
Awesome. Hey, well, Nick, this was an awesome chance, you know, sit down and talk about Axe Wielder John. We're going to have to get you back on for volume 2 and 3, 4, and 5. I love this series. We got to make it happen. Everyone watching, right there is a link. Be sure to back it and make it happen today. With that being said, it's time for us to wrap up. Hope you all have an awesome Wednesday. But most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.